I'm Pat Morrison. For decades, corporations have been limited as to what it is they're allowed to spend not only for candidates in their campaigns, but on behalf of candidates. The same has held for labor unions as well. But now the Supreme Court has voted 5-4 to overturn those restrictions. The implications could be immense in the literal millions of dollars in spending on behalf of or against a candidate from one side or another, even though that money, as I said, wouldn't go directly into the campaign. This also undercuts elements of the McCain-Feingold legislation, which the court had declared constitutional just 6 years ago. Senator John McCain, the Republican senator from Arizona who ran in 2008 for president, said he was disappointed by the decision. Russell Feingold, the Wisconsin Democrat, said it's a terrible mistake, and there is talk already of Congress moving to reinstitute some kind of controls and regulations on spending that would meet constitutional requirements. The question we'll be exploring is whether there is any such thing and what the implications are for the upcoming elections starting in the 2010 midterms for this. First, we're joined by Matt McGill, a partner in Gibson, Dunn and Crutcher, who was on the legal team that represented Citizens United, the group that had put together a film about Hillary Clinton that it had wanted to air during the election of 2008, but was prohibited from doing so and took this case to the court. Mr. McGill, thank you for being here.
Pleasure to be here.
So what for your group and the people you represent and the rest of those who've been watching this case, does this mean in terms of elections and money?
Well, for Citizens United, I mean, this means that they can participate in our electoral politics. They're a group of citizens of modest means who have banded together under a corporate form in order to speak politically. And in Citizens United's case, they make movies about, and sometimes those movies are about political candidates.
Those modest means were augmented, Mr. McGill, by a lot of corporate money and to get the film made and to be put out there. So does this mean that Citizens United is going to be mounting similar efforts this time around? And is it hearing from other organizations trying to do very much the same?
Well, I think what you're likely to see is that labor unions and groups like Citizens United and the ACLU and the National Rifle Association will once again be able to participate in a meaningful way in our electoral politics, which is the way it always had been until the McCain-Feingold statute was passed in early 2002.
So, Mr. McGill, do you think that the people you represent, should there be any restrictions on the amount of money that can be spent for either on behalf of candidates or even in campaigns? Because the latter part of that was still upheld by the court.
Well, I think you're right about that in the sense that the court's ruling today leaves undisturbed any limits on contributions to candidates, but it's also very clear that the government may not in any way restrict the ability of corporations or labor unions to spend their own money in engaging in political speech.
Mr. McGill, do you have any concerns that this could end up being he who has the most money wins?
No, I really don't. I mean, because as I said before, and this kind of restriction on political speech was a relatively recent innovation. It was added as part of the McCain-Feingold bill. It was actually a rather small part of the McCain-Feingold campaign finance bill that decided that it was necessary to muzzle corporations and labor unions in the 30 or 60 days before an election. That is when it mattered most. I'm not really concerned that you're going to see an overwhelming tide of corporate spending unlike anything we've ever seen before.
And the court decision also means that money can be spent right up until the last. There is no end to, there's no calendar that says this is the cutoff date for this kind of support. Lisa Graves joins us too, the executive director of the Center for Media and Democracy. She was assistant attorney general in the Clinton administration and dealt with this particular matter. Ms. Graves, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me on.
So what was it that the Clinton administration was doing on this particular issue, and how do you feel about the court's 5-4 ruling today?
Well, I was Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the policy shop at Justice back in the Clinton administration, and the administration definitely did support campaign finance reforms. I'm very disappointed in the Supreme Court's decision today. I think it's a radical decision, and as someone who worked on judicial nominations and the effort to prevent right-wing takeover of the court, I think what we see here is the result of this long-term legal revolution that the right has been pushing for, to have five guys on the Supreme Court basically rewrite our campaign finance laws to allow corporations to spend unlimited money in elections.
It also would allow labor unions to do the same, and groups, as Mr. McGill pointed out, like the ACLU. Doesn't this even the playing field?
I don't think it evens the playing field at all. It really is a situation in which he with the most gold wins. And the fact is that groups like the Center for Media and Democracy and our coalition, movetoamend.org, what we're pushing for is an amendment to ensure that the people can regulate corporations. Once the people have the power to regulate corporations, they can make distinctions between corporate efforts and union efforts and public interest efforts. But what the current rule does by the Supreme Court is basically strike down all of those very reasonable, wise limits to try to limit the influence of corporate dollars in elections.
Senator Feingold, the co-author of McCain-Feingold, said that the Supreme Court had, or that laws had limited the role of corporate money in federal elections since Teddy Roosevelt was president, which was more than 100 years ago. Mr. McGill said, but this is really of recent vintage with McCain-Feingold.
Well, I think Mr. McGill is definitely a spinner. He's used to spin. That's what his organization does. He says that his organization occasionally is involved in movies about elections. Their primary modus operandi is to make movies about John Kerry, about Hillary Clinton, about Barack Obama, about any Democrat, and to try to run those movies as close to the election as possible as part of poison politics, as part of mudslinging. That's their agenda. That's their objective. They spin.
Mr. McGill?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure. I won't resort to calling my colleague here names. I've got the facts. The McCain-Feingold bill was passed in 2002, and prior to that time, corporations and labor unions were permitted to run ads right up until Election Day.
With unlimited money being spent?
That was banned. And nothing, it's just a complete fabrication, this idea that this law has existed for 100 years. What's existed for 100 years is a ban on contributions, and this case has never had anything to do with contributions.
And so, Mr. McGill, what do you see as the consequences in the 2000 election? You putting down any money on how much money is going to be spent?
I don't think it'll be very different from what we saw in 2008. I really don't, because the...
Why is that, since you worked so hard to get this law overturned?
Because for my client, it wasn't about money. For my client, the government made it a felony for them to play a movie. They wanted to throw my client in jail because he wanted to play a movie.
Let's dial back from a little, because this is not, as far as I understand, a criminal offense. It's a matter of how you spend money and whether the Federal Election Commission is going to pursue this. Lisa Graves, Ms. Graves, do you expect any difference in money? Because this was clearly a very hard-fought battle.
I'm actually astonished by Citizens United's assertion that this won't have any impact in bringing in hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of new dollars into the election right up until the eve of election. That was their objective, was to make sure that they could spend, in essence, unlimited funds on these sorts of films and mudslinging right up to the eve of the election, and that's exactly what's going to happen unless the people come together and say no to this usurpation by the Supreme Court and say this is a radical decision that will not stand. That's precisely the goal, and it's astonishing. If you have him on next year at this time, the numbers will speak for themselves. It'll be an incredible amount of money that's going to come in elections as a result of this. Today, across the country, in boardrooms of corporations nationwide, people are toasting with champagne because this is a huge boon to corporations.
So, Mr. McGill, is Citizens United already planning what it might do in this this midterm election now that the Supreme Court has made its decision?
Truthfully, I don't know. I'm in San Francisco and my client's in Washington, but I expect that they're going to avail themselves of their First Amendment right to speak out in the election.
You haven't talked to your clients about this?
Plans, however.
You haven't talked to your clients about the ruling?
I've talked to my clients, but not yet about their specific plans for 2010.
Mr. McGill, I hope we'll have you back. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
Matt McGill was on the legal team representing Citizens United, which took its case to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said 5-4 that it agrees that there should be no restrictions on how much money organizations like corporations and labor unions can spend independently on behalf of candidates or issues in an election right up to the election day itself. The restrictions both on the timing and on the amounts of money had been existing certainly since McCain-Feingold in one form or another for a very long time before. We're talking about the implications for the political system to this opening up of the floodgates, if indeed there will be floodgates to money flowing into these causes, spending around election, and whether or not Congress is positioned, as some members of Congress have already said, to try to do something to reinstitute laws that will meet constitutional muster with the Supreme Court and set up some barriers to the flow of money. We'll be hearing from you at 866-893-5722 as you learn of this information, what you think it will mean for politics. Do you think it's a good idea to make sure that corporations' free speech rights, as the Supreme Court said, are not impeded by any dollar restrictions on what they can spend and when? 866-893-5722 is how you can call and express your thoughts and your sentiments about this. Does it even the playing field, given that labor unions and corporations will now have equal access to spending as much money as they would like on these causes, if not directly on the candidates? 866-893-KPCC is the number to call and to talk to us. Lisa Graves, obviously you have some concern about how the corporate spending will work out, but you think that that labor unions and corporations will not try to be evenly matched when it comes to the dollar amounts?
I think it's impossible for the unions to match the treasuries of the corporations. If you think of Goldman Sachs, it's billions and billions of dollars. AIG, it's billions and billions of dollars. Name a big oil corporation, all the billions that they have at their disposal to spend in elections. Unions with their dues are no match for corporations in this instance. And while the rule on its surface may seem formally equal, a kind of formal equality, the upshot on a daily basis in these elections is just going to be an enormous groundswell of corporate funds racing into the election.
Well, Ms. Graves, let me ask you and get a quick answer whether it makes any difference that the Supreme Court let stand the rules that say that corporations and labor unions can't put money directly into a candidate's coffers.
I have precious little hope that will make much of a difference, because while there are limits on how much they can directly give to a candidate, what groups like Citizens United can do is spend all their money trashing the opponent of the candidate they prefer. And so they don't have to give the money directly to the candidate they prefer. They can spend their money to try to undo.
All right. When we come back, we'll hear more from Lisa Graves and from you about the Supreme Court ruling today, lifting the lid off the amount of money corporations and unions can donate to campaign causes. I'm Pat Morrison. Among the 9 justices of the Supreme Court, what a difference one vote makes. In 2003, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor voted to uphold the constitutionality of McCain-Feingold limits on how much money corporations and unions could spend on behalf of causes and candidates. That ruling now has been overturned today, 6-7 years later, as Sandra Day O'Connor is gone, and a new court sits in its place, a 5-4 vote overturning McCain-Feingold and saying that the sky's the limit when it comes to how much money corporations and unions can spend, not in candidates' coffers directly, but on behalf of candidates and causes. The case brought by Citizens United, which had put together an anti-Hillary Clinton movie and was constrained by these restrictions from airing it as it would like on television. We'd like to hear from you about the end of these restrictions at 866-893-KPCC. Jonathan is calling from Laguna Woods. Jonathan, what do you think?
Hi, Pat. Thank you for taking on this incredibly important issue. This really proves, and I hope everybody is aware, that this is the most activist decision. I think it's appalling. Some people may support it, but it's clearly the most activist decision. And the notion that the conservative bloc is restrained and the liberal bloc is activist is just disproved by this decision. Can't say it was a surprise when the Supreme Court decided on its own, the 5 justices, to have it re-argued on the broadest grounds. And secondly, Pat, where do we go from here? Constitutional amendment taking away personhood from corporations and labor unions, for that matter. which never really was decided by the Supreme Court. Secondly, legislation, about the only legislation I can think of, is requiring shareholders to approve those expenditures by their corporate board.
And this is something that has certainly been raised before, the question that the corporations can spend their profits without consulting those shareholders. Jonathan has some ideas about how some legislation might affect and maybe hem in some of this policy that the Supreme Court has now affected by its 5-4 vote today. Robert Weissman is the president of Public Citizen, which will certainly begin lobbying soon for Congress to adopt some of those restrictions. Mr. Weissman, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on.
So what are your concerns briefly about the Supreme Court ruling and how it affects elections, and what legislation would you like to see Congress take up?
Well, in the decision today, which ruled that corporations have a First Amendment right to spend as much as they want on elections, the court is inviting Exxon and Goldman Sachs and Pfizer and the rest of the Fortune 500 to spend as much as they want from their own treasuries to influence election outcomes, and we are pretty certain they're going to take up that offer with really devastating consequences for our already infirm democracy. We're just going to see issue after issue tilted even further toward the corporate side. In terms of the direct reforms, there are some things that we can do legislatively. We support that idea that was just mentioned for requiring shareholders to affirmatively vote in favor of any corporate expenditure on political elections. We also think it's absolutely fundamental now that we get public financing of elections so that every candidate at least has a base of substantial support that comes without strings attached and without any allegiances to richer corporate donors. But ultimately, this decision has to be reversed itself. And barring the court reversing itself, which seems unlikely with the current configuration, we do need a constitutional amendment to overturn the decision. And we are have launched today a campaign to do exactly that. We're urging people to visit our website at don'tgetrolled.org or citizen.org and sign on for a constitutional amendment clarifying that the First Amendment does not give rights to for-profit corporations to dominate our electoral process.
Well, of course, the constitutional amendment requires a very high threshold indeed, which is why there are so few of them. Lisa Graves, who was in the Clinton administration dealing with legal policy, one of the concerns that's come up because of the Supreme Court ruling is the idea of pass-through contributions. It's one thing for corporations or labor unions, for that matter, to spend money on behalf of a candidate or a cause. These have to be reported on the public record as contributions. But if, for example, the Chamber of Commerce serves as a pass-through, that corporations can put money into an agency like the Chamber, which can then therefore spend money, that they don't have to disclose who gave them the money.
You're exactly right. It's really legalized money laundering. And the Center for Media and Democracy, PRWatch.org, we've been monitoring corporate spending and corporate spin and these front groups for a number of years, and they've just proliferated. In this election cycle, we're likely to see them even more as a result of this decision. And as Robert said, we really need a constitutional amendment to address this. And there are a number of proposals on the table to address that, along with the one we're supporting with movetoamend.org. But the fact is that there is totally inadequate reporting and disclosure about how these corporations are laundering their money through groups like the Chamber of Commerce and through groups named with nice names like Citizens United. And what little reporting we do get, we get the year after the election in terms of the reports, the IRS reports of these groups.
So by which time the votes that may or may not have been influenced by these ads have been cast?
That's exactly right. It's too little too late.
Let's hear from you, as I said, about this decision 5-4 by the Supreme Court today, saying that corporations have political free speech rights that are protected by the First Amendment. And since speech is money, as the Supreme Court has already ruled, the free expenditure of money by corporations or unions is pretty much now unchained when it comes to spending on behalf of candidates, if not putting money into candidates' campaigns directly. In Huntington Beach, let's hear from David. David, what do you think?
Yeah, I just have fundamental problems with the idea that corporations are fictitious persons that have any rights whatsoever. It's not guaranteed in the Constitution. That referred to people. They don't have free speech. What are we going to give them next? Votes?
Lisa,
I think this is crazy.
Lisa Graves, what about that legal foundation that a corporation is entitled to a citizen's, to an individual's right? Has that been challenged? Has that been affirmed?
Well, it has been challenged, and this Supreme Court by fiat and previous activist Supreme Courts in the 1800s approved that view, but it's wrong. People have inalienable rights. Corporations don't. Corporations have only the rights that the people give to them. And the caller is exactly right. What's next? Voting rights? I think that
I'd like to see them in a jury box, though.
Right. Well, there's that. But this is a situation in which this is a legal fiction. It's one thing to say that a corporation must be considered to be a person for purposes of being able to hold, have a binding contract and have contracts enforced. That's in the nature of being a corporation. But the idea that a corporation has the inalienable rights of people to freedom of speech is simply wrong.
All right,
and Scalia is wrong to suggest otherwise.
Let's go to Rancho Santa Margarita and hear what Tony's got to say. Tony, go ahead.
Hi, I'm so glad the two of you are on. This is very important. Like Lisa just said, who determined that a people is a corporation? And I find it just appalling that this capitalistic society is constantly trying to take advantage, and we must legislate for people to do the right thing. It's so obvious that the corporations are going to resort to their own coffers, making as much money as they can, and having their lobbyists and political people in play for their own self-interest and not for the interest of the American people. The Constitution says the people. A corporation is not a people, not when it comes to free speech.
Tony,
campaign contribution.
Thank you, Tony. Michael's calling from Tustin about corporate issues. Michael, go ahead.
Hi, Pat. Yes. Another word, constitutional amendment is one way of looking at it, and another would be corporate charter reform. That's what Ralph Nader would tell you.
Well, Public Citizen was founded by Ralph Nader, so Robert Weissman, what about corporate charter reform? Would this serve as some kind of break, but whether it comes to corporations or to labor unions, as to the amount of money that can be spent and where and when?
Well, the idea of focusing on chartering is that since corporations don't exist in nature, they are the creation of the government. You get a license to be formed as a corporation, that we could condition what you're permitted to do as a corporation. And I think that idea still has a lot of vibrancy to it, but it is not at all clear that it would, after the Supreme Court ruling, that it would possibly, they would have the ability to deal with the problem of political speech. You can't condition the grant of a benefit to a person or an entity like a corporation under the Supreme Court ruling on denial of constitutional rights. So I'm not sure that chartering could get to this problem. I think that that really the way to, what we directly need is a constitutional amendment. I should mention, by the way, that Ralph has in the past and again today called for a constitutional amendment to restrict corporate rights. Even though the corporate rights go back to 1886, the idea they have First Amendment rights is much newer and only goes back to the mid-1970s.
All right, let's go to Rosemead and hear from Sydney on a question that I think Lisa Graves can probably address. Sydney, tell us about it.
Hi.
Go ahead, you're on the air.
Okay. Does this allow a country to set up a corporation, have some of its citizens set up a corporation, and then that country, for example, China, try to influence the American elections?
Lisa Graves, there have been campaign money has been returned in the past when it comes directly to candidates. It's been given by foreign nationals. It's clearly against the law. But what about corporate money from international businesses, as Sydney suggested, that may have offices or branches in the United States?
Well, he makes an excellent point, and Greg Palast had a great piece that he wrote about this issue, which is to say, in this era of multinational corporations, including multinational banks, the idea that these multinational corporations should be on the same footing as ordinary people in the United States, citizens of the United States, is simply wrong. And it does pave the way for greater influence by foreign nationals and foreign corporations, or U.S. corporations incorporated here but that have multiple branches around the world, Halliburtons and others, to have even greater effect on our elections and public policy. And we've got to put a stop to that, and we have got to have a conscious amendment in order to do that, because Robert's exactly right. It's not clear that this can be fixed at all by statute the way the Supreme Court and its radical activists wrote this decision. We're going to have a conscious amendment to set this straight.
Ms. Graves, I want to clarify a point that Mr. McGill, who represents Citizens United, had made earlier, that his clients could have gone to prison if they had put up these anti-Hillary Clinton ads and spent the money needed to do so?
It is the case that there are both civil and criminal penalties
in
federal campaign finance
law,
but they were never charged with a crime. And I think that they've kind of brought that out as a bit of a scare campaign.
Let's hear from Mike in Beverly Hills about this. Mike, go ahead.
Hi.
Go ahead, Mike.
Hi. I think that a lot of what I'm hearing over the radio on your show is a lot of a scare tactic. I mean, it is really irrelevant if you look at any of the campaigns that you've seen over the last few years, last few campaigns, whether a party is on one side or another of an issue. Take a look at healthcare as an example. You've got the doctors on one side, you've got the attorneys who are fearful of malpractice representation for their clients. You've got big pharma. Everybody is on has got their own agenda, and all kinds of money is thrown on both sides of a given issue for different candidates.
Okay, so Mike, you don't think that raising the limits will make a difference?
Oh, the person who makes the decision is going to be the voter, and not the money.
All right,
money
Mike.
Get the message out.
Thank you so much, Robert Weissman. Here we have Mike saying that look, it's the voter who's going to decide that however much money is being spent on ads one way or another, ultimately, it's not up to the ads; it's up to the voter.
Well, that's true, and of course, that's the leftover hope we have that we still have this core remnant of democracy. But it's also the case, and not controversial, really, that political advertising makes a huge difference. And you know, even if we had the disclosure rules you're talking about, most of this money is going to go into this new infusion of money is going to go into negative advertising. And it may not matter at all that the source of the money is identified. Negative advertising works. Everybody who does politics knows it. We're going to see a huge surge of it coming from the corporate interests that are now freed by the Supreme Court decision.
All right. Thank you both. Robert Weissman, the president of Public Citizen, and Lisa Graves, who is in the Clinton Administration Office of Legal Policy, about these matters now that the Supreme Court has ruled 5-4 to end any restrictions on the amount of money that can be spent or when it can be spent on behalf of causes or candidates by corporations or unions. The prediction that the floodgates will be open as far as cash coming into the 2010 campaign. So if you don't like the TV ads now, you better brace because there are going to be a lot more of them. And speaking of TV ads in the second hour, the Super Bowl for the first time has accepted a political ad. This one, an anti-abortion ad from Focus on the Family. We're going to be talking about why the Super Bowl will be airing this on CBS and what are some of the other ads that it has rejected in the past. When we come back, we're talking about waiting times for you as an HMO patient and why, well, you won't have to wait so long.